Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, bringing you the latest and greatest in the geek sphere as we know it today. And my phone is going off over in the corner, which means I'm in demand. Which means I must be spreading the word of geek properly as my fans adore me with phone calls, messages, and bills. Sorry. Phone going nuts. We are sponsored by Suzy Q's, who is a talented and incredibly gifted jewelry maker. I know that we have tagged her. We have told you where to go, but just in case you don't see the tags or you haven't been able to find her on Facebook, it is SuzyQ's.com, SuzyQueues.com. So you can go there, check out her jewelry. It is fantastic. It is probably the most unique and stunning pieces I have ever seen. I mean, not like I'm an expert. Not that I'm running out to buy jewelry. I mean, I have my trinkets that I've picked up along on my travels through life. But I would honestly, if I came across Suzy in a con where she normally is, it would catch my eye. I would stop and look. And it's not because I'm biased. It's not because she's sponsoring us, but it's because she is just wickedly talented. Holy crap. Go to her webpage, check it out. She also has an Instagram, SuzyQues.com, or SuzyQues on Instagram. Same name, same spelling. Check them out. Go to the Facebook page. They're always tagged in our post on Facebook. If you are getting us through iHeartRadio or iTunes or Amazon or what infinite supply of how we are available to you, the listener, go to SuzyQues.com. Look at it. The link is in our description. So if you can't find it, then revert back and spell it. And you're all good to go. Check it out. This week, it is a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff and not a lot of stuff. It's weird when you're watching the geek sphere spin as it is, and you watch trends come and trends go, and what's hot and what's not. There are particular hits. Of course, Star Wars seems to be like kind of on everyone's tongue, which is a good thing, and it's in a positive light, especially with Mandalorian, Lego dropping the pre-order for the Mandalorian set, and it is, I mean, it's a must-have. Of course, it's like $140, so this ship must be like huge. It's Mando. Baby Yoda, of course, is the must-have out of the set, and the ship that that Mando drives, flies, yep, zoops around in. Yes, zoops. That is a word now. He is probably, if you don't have it, there's a little mini fig set that has all a bunch of Mandalorians in it. He's in it. But the ship, for that price, that's kind of like on par with like the Falcon initial release. So this set might be relatively big in comparison to other vehicles, especially bigger than the X-Wing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what it is, how it is. I already put my pre-order in. I can't lie. Like, I'm going to play that one down at all. I don't remember seeing a date on this, and Lego's always really sketch about when they want to let people know. The Haunted House that came out was like a sucker punch to me because I didn't get in on time for that one. And I'm really upset about that because it would work really good with my city, with my Ghostbusters, with all of the sets that I have arranged into my little town. The only one I'm missing, and I'm trying to like recreate like portions of different things in my Lego city, And one, of course, is Back to the Future. And the only set that comes close, and it's like one of the harder sets to get a hold of. So I just kind of keep biding my time, waiting to come across it in a con at a decent price, which is difficult. That's the hardest part. Finding it at a set's get it. Anyway, go to Lego.com. I'm one of the VIP members. I get points. I'm an addict. I can't help it. But I want to recreate my Back to the Future scene. And Town Hall is the best way to get the downtown. So, what else we got going in the geek sphere? Con news, which it doesn't come as a surprise, but I'm saddened by this. Colorado Festival of Horror has postponed till September 10th through the 12th of 2021. I can understand, and there was a long conversation that broke down on this, everyone's fine, everyone agrees that it is in the best interest of fans, of vendors, of guests, to wait to see how the new con world, and don't kid yourself, there is going to be a new con world after this. And the breakdown and how all of that, what that looks like is anyone's guess. But I can guarantee you it is going to be drastically different. As it was when you went to con, sometimes, you know, people are kind of flaky about taking pictures with you if you're not in the photo line, or when you go up to meet artists, some of them just, you know, don't want to shake hands because of con crud. They're protecting themselves, and, you know, I totally get that. When I was part of the radio world, Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull would never really shake hands. He'd, like, bump elbows because he plays the flute. I mean, his livelihood is his hands. So, and people would, like, squeeze his hand extra hard, or, you know, he'd get ill because touching people. And anyway, so the con world, I think, is going to drastically change in regards to distancing, taking pictures. We'll see the fallout, I'm sure, next year as things continue to break down and evolve, because we're not going to see many cons, I think, this year. I think, like I said, Rocky Mountain Con from last week so far is the only one that I'm seeing that's right out of the gate for cons, and that's not until November. So we can't truly gauge until we get there. So I will be interested to see that. With that said, we talked about this last week. San Diego Comic-Con, celebrating its 50th anniversary, is now starting to throw up stuff for the virtual interactions, the virtual panels. There is a guide that is up that you can go over to see what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. Of course, this debuts this Saturday, July 25th at 10 a.m. And they have the channel, which is Comic-Cons YouTube channel. And you can, it should be easy to find. It is everywhere right now. And I saw an interesting article, and it was actually more of a comment than an article, that San Diego Comic-Con was still charging. I don't think San Diego Comic-Con is charging to go to the virtual con. As far as I know, it is free, and I haven't seen anything indicated on their side saying that they're charging. So, who knows? And that was kind of like a weird, erroneous comment that I saw flash through my feed, and then I lost it. So, Is it accurate? Is it true? I'm going to say the nay, because I can't imagine it. But like I said, the coolest thing out of that is you can print the pass. I got to find someone that has a printer, because I went to look at mine, and yeah, it's kaput. It is dead. There's no bringing that son of a bitch back. So one of the big things that the virtual panel is going to be, I guess, the comic buyer's guide is doing a big sit down celebrating the 50 years, the Overstreet Advisors, and we are also going to get Steve Geppi from Diamond to sit down. I'm curious to see how that works. This will be interesting, to say the least. But this Saturday, the July 25th, Oh, wait, no. Saturday, July 25th. Not this Saturday. Jesus. Today's only June, right? Yeah, we're still in June. So July. July 25th. I guess we still got some time. Jesus. I definitely need more in me to evidently talk, because I have no clue what I'm saying. So keep your eye out. More information to come. And they'll be doing it. So, and if you have a printer and you want to print me out a pass, I will definitely take that. Absolutely. Or a printer. Either or. I'm not picky. What else? Oh, this was big news. This was huge yesterday, or today, or however you want to address this. There are rumors floating around that Michael Keaton is in talks to return as Batman for the Flash film. Now, this would be, you know what, I'm at a loss for words on exactly the implications, the impact that this would be. I mean, let's face it, Michael Keaton hasn't been in the Batman costume since, what, 92? And we got kind of this unique tease of Birdman, and I don't know if you ever saw this film, and it's a very unique indie film that Keaton did for, it was the 2014? Dude won an Oscar for it, and there are many reasons why, but you can tell when you're watching this film that it is a direct shot at Batman, and his interactions and his life in that role. And he became a fan favorite. I mean, I remember when everyone announced, or was talking, because no internet then, was talking about Keaton being Batman, and he's like, no, they can't do it. It's Mr. Mom. You know, no, not a chance. But as turned out, from history, this is history talking, not me, he is the greatest Batman. Okay, maybe that is a little me, but let's face it, of all of the standout Batmans, Keaton is usually the first go-to. He set the bar. He made the precedent of what Batman should be. And not only what Batman should be, but the portrayal of Bruce Wayne, which is difficult because it is the necessary evil. It is the other side of the Batman lore. Because without the Bruce Wayne aspect, Batman would really have no reason to not be Batman 100% of the time. It's just to keep up the facade of Bruce Wayne, to keep Wayne Enterprises going. It's the package deal, but it is a necessary package. So to see Keaton go from one extreme with the Batman and then to the kind of the bumbling awkwardness that is Bruce Wayne, the side that he wants to embrace more, of course, that we see through the first couple of films, that's really where he wants to go, but because of moral obligation, and he is the Batman, he can't do it. That said, Keaton coming back with Ezra Miller's Flash would be, I mean, my mind's abuzz with the possibility and how they want to do this. Now, through further conversations and research and everything else, we talked about this last week, and I brought this up, that they want to bring back Superman and have him more of like a Nick Fury role. Well, they're starting to hint at Batman doing kind of like the same thing, where he's going to be doing more cameos, and if it's the Michael Keaton Batman doing these cameos, that would be kind of cool. Now, whether or not this impacts the other Batman film with the sparkly vampire, it remains to be seen, because Robert Paulson has been MIA, and he's in hiding because of the COVID. That's fine. And it's an earlier Batman. It's an earlier version of Batman. We don't have all of the toys and the skills necessarily that unfold. And how this all fits, who knows. But this plays directly from Ezra Miller's kind of run through Justice League. There is kind of some implications to the Flash TV series with they doing the Crisis on Infinite Earths and how all of this breaks down. So I'm really, really anxious to see how they do it. I'm sorry, Robert Pattinson. Robert Paulson. Robert Paulson is a voice actor for the Animaniacs. Robert Pattinson is a sparkly vampire. So how this all breaks down with the two films and everything that is going to hit, I don't know. But to even think about how this is going to play out, and just to see Keaton back in the Batman role, is just, oh, the little boy in me is jumping up and down with a cape. Oh, this would be spectacular. Are you kidding me? And if we could actually talk Batman, or talk Keaton into being Batman again, to take up his role as like the Dark Knight Returns or something along that line. I mean, Affleck, for what he did, was good. Actually, I did like Affleck as not only Bruce Wayne, but as Batman. It was a very interesting mix, and I have to say I liked him better than I did like Val Kilmer, and, you know, George Clooney was just, George Clooney was George Clooney with a mask, unfortunately, and that pains me to say that, but I did like Affleck's Batman. It was a good blend. But it's not going to be Keaton. It never, in my mind, will. So, where does this leave us? Nobody knows. Flash, they're looking at a spring 2021 release because of the COVID and everything that jackknife the entire production schedule for everybody. And who knows if the spring is going to be enough time with overlap and delays and all of that. But if Keaton does come back and is the Batman, I want to know what costume they're going to bring. Is he going to get something new? Is he going to get something kind of that we've seen? Or are we going to go back to 1992 and get a right proper Batman costume? Well, I can't say proper, but definitely one of the top. Let me know what your top thoughts are on costumes, on Batmans, and everything below, because I'm always open to input. Some definite responses. Moving along to streaming news. This hit, finally, after so much time, Lucifer has announced the August 21st as their release time for the next series of Lucifer, the next installment, and none too soon. I think Netflix at this point is just trying to figure out how to get all of the series that they're sitting on edited and everything out without flooding everything, and to try and capitalize as much as humanly possible on their works. Because let's face it, they're sitting on at least four or five different series, and to drop all of them at once would, I don't know if it would be premature, but I think that there would be some kind of loss in having them all land at once, stagger it out, keep people's interest as we, you know, try to progress towards a normal schedule. That said, anyway, I digress. Lucifer is going to hit August 21st, which I couldn't be happier about. The series, when it left Fox, was sad. It was depressing. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, about them trying to figure out the contract and everything else to continue with the story. Here's the other side of the story. As soon as they announced the August 21st release date, they let everyone know that it has been renewed for a season 6, which that had already been leaked. However, the other side is that they have said this will be the final season. So season 6 will be it. There's nothing after that, and they will tie everything up. It is final, final. And those are their words, not mine. Final, final. A little redundant. It is a unique little trailer that they kind of give you to show the season 6, the teaser, and then it's end. I don't know. I'm curious how do you end this? Because even like the last season that they did looked pretty final. I'm curious if we will see more angels, more of God, more wars. A couple more demons. I mean, let's face it, Lucifer's gotten away with some pretty, you know, not lackluster villains, because I guess by technicality he is a villain. But, I mean, as far as opposition, as far as, you know, other people to go up against, it's been petty crooks in the storyline, of course, probably very limited because you're on Fox. Now you got Netflix, and you got, you know, the almighty production team behind you. Maybe we'll see an uptick in story with pace and with everything else that goes with the Netflix budget. I don't think that Lucifer is going to be hindered anyway by this. I honestly think it gives you an end and it gives you a pacing so you know how to get through it, to navigate it, and to give us the fans the closure and the spectacular end that we want to see this series achieve. Not just cancellation, but an actual completion to the story, the tale. So everyone's supposed to come back, and I'm fine with that. There isn't a character on this show that I'm just like, really? Do we need that? Do we want them? No. In other Netflix news, this was kind of... Okay, we've talked about this in previous podcasts, and I haven't really paid attention to the show, but now it's definitely on the radar. As the Karate Kid sequels, the Cobra Kai series is being moved to Netflix and has taken the third season that hasn't aired yet and will be airing that. In addition, they're looking to extend the length of this series. So, and here's to get you caught up to date. In case you missed it or you're looking for The Karate Kid, it was on YouTube. And it was on one of the streaming services that YouTube was offering. And it basically was a failed YouTube channel, is what it breaks down to. YouTube trying to follow along with like Netflix and then picking up movies and other things like that, trying to get into this streaming world instead of just relying on, you know, kids doing stupid stunts in their backyard. Them trying to find legitimate content that people can watch, people stay, sell advertising, you know the story. So as YouTube is trying to figure out its business model, they end up doing Cobra Kai, the continuating story of The Karate Kid, which, meh, Daniel LaRusso came across as a dick and just a total cocky peckerhead in the first couple of episodes. And I was just like, you know what? I don't, there's no right in this. There is no right in the story. So I said, screw it. And I bounced. I got out. So now we go through the first season. It survives the second season, and they filmed the third season, but had not moved to air it yet. They were canceling the show. They were done, but this also plays into YouTube's new format that they're trying to develop with ads, paid subscription, however they want to do it. That's YouTube's barrel of monkeys. Netflix was in a bidding war. Evidently, they weren't the only ones that were interested in this property. And I can understand the gleam of original content carrying on a beloved story. And let's face it, Karate Kid, for a lot of people, is a very heartwarming story. And it is something out of their youth. I mean, what they do, 3 films? And how can you not love Mr. Miyagi? Unfortunately, Pat Morita is no longer with us. And they do address that in the series, that, you know, Daniel's trying to find his way without Mr. Miyagi, without parental supervision. Of course, the man's in his 40s, so I don't know what he needs supervision for. He kind of, I wouldn't say, has it all figured out. But, you kind of have a foothold at this point. You can a semi-adult. Hell, even I can semi-adult. But what the third season looks like, I don't know. The promo picture that I saw is actually LaRusso suited up, and it looks like he's going to go at it. So I don't know. I may revisit this whole fiasco with the Karate Kid, and I like the team. Don't get me wrong, the actors and the story is timeless. But it, like I said, I just couldn't get past that whole nonsense of the first couple of episodes. It's like, there's no one really in the right here. And I ain't got no dog in this fight. I don't care. And it was on YouTube. That's what was probably the more deterrent in watching the series than anything else. It wasn't that I didn't want to watch it. It was on YouTube. Come on, man. I don't have time for that. YouTube? Quality's all grainy and shit? No. I don't know. And it should, and I don't know what, it might actually be fun. Revisiting the old, you know, haunts and everything else. So, evidently, YouTube got quite the massive views on it, and they're saying that they received about 5.4 million views. So, it's not a dead property by any stretch of the imagination. So, the kicker in this, however, is that the first two seasons will remain on YouTube, not exclusively as Netflix garners the same rights. So you'll be able to get it both ways if you don't have a Netflix account or if you haven't stolen someone else's Netflix accounts at this point. You got that for you. Which leads me to this week's dun-dun-dun shakedown. Staying with the Netflix stories... This actually, I know I was supposed to have music there, and I just jacked it up, so I don't know what I did. It's busted. It's kaput, too. So, music next week. This week's shakedown is kind of more of a labor of love than anything else. I've spoken about the Transformers. It is a very... I don't know. I mean, it's like right there with the childhood for me with G.I. Joes, with Lego, with a lot of the toys of the youth, you know? And let's face it, Transformers, for most in my age group, or in general, I mean, the fandom for Star Wars, for Transformers is pretty extensive. And whether it be Beast Wars, whether it be whatever... Transformers, I think, it just hit at the right time and everybody just embraced it. Now, Netflix has announced that there is a new Transformers series coming. And right away, everyone was like, oh no, here we go. And everyone gets, you know, their butts puckered in regards to thinking, okay, it's going to be some other travesty like Michael Bay where it looks like them, but it doesn't. And it just gets all convoluted. Or they're thinking like another of the... odd animations that we've seen for Transformers over the years where they just keep kind of mishmashing different characters with different names, Beast Wars, and there have been some interesting stories that have come out of it, and there's been some very interesting Transformers characters that you kind of like, all right, that's kind of cool, but you know, you have no background, you have no idea about them. They just kind of look cool, and you're like, all right. And then you go about your business. The nice thing that Netflix did, I think they actually sat and thought about this. They looked at what Bay has done. They took note of Bumblebee and have stepped back and said, you know what, we're going to do a Gen 1 series digital animation of Transformers. And now this is a three-part series, and it is... Wow. That's all I can say about it. When I saw the first trailer, I just simply said, wow. It is the War for Cybertron, Siege, the War for Cybertron. There had been serious toys put out on this. They are very reminiscent of the old, and I spoke about it because I picked up a couple. I couldn't help myself. And I picked up another one the other day. And it doesn't feel like the Transformers of old. And in fact, there are some improvements. The points of articulation, they're just really fun. They're cool. And it is very reminiscent of the old. And it makes me think of like if the technology was where this is back then, I would have just loved the shit out of this as a kid. Because, you know, it's not like a stiff lump of metal with plastic and everything else. It really works well together. It flows. And I know, like I said, when you try to transform it, you're worried about, you know, breaking the damn thing because it is plastic. But the plastic's a lot more durable than I give it credit. And, you know, okay. I picked up Starscream, finally. And I also picked up Soundwave, which is a must for any Transformer fan out there. Absolutely, without doubt, probably the coolest Transformer, just from the way he sounds. And always gets to, you know, shoot tapes at you. It's just like a really bad 80s cliche. So, with the series, the new one, coming, Netflix has been very dodgy on dates. They kind of dropped the trailer, and this is a while ago that we talked about the new Transformer trailer and the look and the characters that they're bringing, because it's three parts. We start on Cybertron, then we go to Earth, and after that, we don't know. The third installment has yet to be named, and I don't know if they're waiting on the toy line to decide for Hasbro or if the creative team actually has a name and we're waiting for them to finish creating and producing the animation. We don't know. So it starts with Siege, which is now finally got a date of July 30th. This is about a month behind of what they had said. And the reason for the delay was simply because they wanted the other dubbed versions to all hit at the same time. So when Netflix releases this, they want all versions available, which only makes sense. They don't want, you know, just the English version versus, you know, what other languages they are dubbing this series into. It has nothing to do with anything from the production team, which oddly enough is Rooster Teeth. And yes, Rooster Teeth of Red versus Blue and endless supplies of endless supply of podcasts and some very entertaining quality material out there. So we've talked about Rooster Teeth at length multiple times, but yes, they are the production team behind the animation on this. The only worry, and I kind of have a kind of annoyed with Netflix on this, where they could be promoting it. Same thing with, like, Lucifer. We haven't seen a whole lot of material out there to indicate trailers or promoting these shows. Kind of like they're, I don't know, relying on word of mouth? I mean, granted, we've seen more for Lucifer than we have for Transformers. And I don't know if this is they are more confident in Lucifer and not really kind of backing the play on Transformers. But I've seen this before when they were doing Voltron. Now, a lot of people didn't watch the original Voltron that watched this Voltron. So they don't have a point of reference, and they liked the story and they really enjoyed where it went. But Voltron lived and died by the toy series. And I fear that this may have the same impact for the Netflix series. I know the toy line is doing very well. There are variants out there. There's exclusives for different retailers. So all things indicate that the Transformers is a far bigger hit than Voltron. And of course, everyone got behind, especially on Hasbro, to produce some decent Transformers out there. But I don't know if the days of the toy line make or break a series is still alive or not. I know the writing for Voltron got really weird and they lost a lot of their creative team that started it, in addition to the toy line suffering. So, and maybe there just wasn't enough villains. There were, in my opinion, for Voltron, there weren't enough Robeasts. And I love a good Robeast. Especially with mayonnaise. The whole story with Transformers may be a little bit different, and they're just Netflix trying to wrap their brain around how to promote it. But the lackluster of promoting this may kill it before it gets out of the gate. Because I honestly think there are a lot of G1 fans out there for Transformers that want to see a successful series, that want something non-Michael Bay nonsense. I mean, come on. Someone the other night was watching the last night, and I just laughed. I'm just like, just wait for the cartoon. Just stop it now. And the movie, way back in the day, the Transformers movie, scarred a lot of kids. And of course, it was all a ploy to get the toys, the next series of toys. They're like, well, everyone still wants the old toys, so how do we eliminate that? Why don't we just blow them up? And I honestly think from what I remember of my other friends' childhoods, of them blowing up their G.I. Joes and Transformers and seeing how they, you know, survive, you know, small explosions and BBs. Yeah, I honestly think that they're like, yeah, we'll just blow them up. So it was traumatic. It was scarring to see that movie in the theaters, Megatron come in and just wipe out, you know, four of my faves, like, right off the bat. I'm like, oh, but Prowl. The problem that we're looking at is we don't have enough information. And I honestly think that this could be the best of all of the Transformers. If they build properly, if they take what they've learned from Beast Wars, and everybody really got on with Beast Wars. I was distracted at this time. I did not really watch Beast Wars. I saw some of it. I've seen clips of, like, the significant, like, the big bookmarks, the loss of characters that we saw in the series. I mean, and they didn't wait for, like, big massive events. There were, as the story progressed, we lost characters. Like, flat right out, ones got blown up. Just done. And it's cool, and it's kind of refreshing to see them depart from the, oh, you know, the G.I. Joe of these guys can't hit shit, but there's bullets flying everywhere, you know? And you kind of got that with Transformers, where they took a hit, but, you know, they're robots, they repair. They never really went too deep into it. The trailer that I've seen for the new Transformer series is they not only deal with it, but they tackle this head on while building off of the G1 love. And that's all I can call it, is the G1 love. Because after Generation 1 and the new series lands and everyone's just kind of like, eh, everyone was still so in love, and they did such a good job of hitting the mark with the first series. Because let's face it, that's what carried it and has continued to carry it for a lot of years. I think it is the classics. Everyone goes right away, you know, Dinobots, Jazz, Hound for me, Wheeljack, Sunstreaker, Sideswipe, all of the original, the cores that we fell in love with, that we grew up with really enjoying, that the movies never really got. I mean, we had Jazz for all of 35, 40 minutes until Megatron ripped him in half, and we're like, wow, well, that sucked. I mean, we had Ironhide until he got blown apart, but at least he made it a couple of films. Ratchet didn't end well. And I can understand a natural progression for a storyline, but when you're sacrificing characters for the sake of just sacrificing them, when there's no story, when there's nothing to it, yeah, kind of lame. Where does that put us? That is an excellent question. I don't know. What I think is this will be spectacular. This, in my mind, is probably going to be the cartoon of the year. Unfortunately, according to information that I have, the first installment is only 6 episodes. That they, for whatever reason, only decided to limit to 6 episodes, and then we go to Earth to continue the fight as Megatron tries to make Cybertron the you know, galactic soul-crushing entity that they used to be. I guess there's a whole story behind this, and the quest, of course, they do bring in the AllSpark, but that's also Gen 1. They talked about that back in the old cartoon. So there are some very classic key elements, and if the fighting and the characters from the toys are any indication of what we're in store for, this will be, for a lot of fans, a hit. At least, I hope. And that's my shakedown for Transformers, the Netflix series. Cybertron War Siege, yeah! Or however that is. Music explosions, boom, boom, boom. Moving along. Oh, in other TV news, now this one wasn't, I think this is great. Not only because, all right, yes, I know I may have an unhealthy admiration towards Guy Fieri, but the man's a badass, all right? I really love what Guy Fieri does. I love his personality. I love how he interacts with his fans and his love for food and everything that he does. Guy, in my mind, is great. In fact, I've spoken about him a couple of times. But with his restaurant workers and all of that, update on that story, and then we'll get to the whole point of this. Guy raised more than $20 million for restaurant workers during the pandemic that he's donating to people who are out of work during, you know, the restaurant closed down. And he's also officiated more than 100 LGBTQ weddings. I would love to, I want to be my wedding officiated by Guy. I can only imagine what that sermon would be like. And just, that would be awesome. Come on. I gotta reach out to Guy. Of course, that means I also have to get married. I digress. The whole point of this was, with everything that's going on, there has a petition that has been issued that they want to rename Columbus, Ohio to Flavortown. Since this is Guy Fieri's hometown, there's an initiative to get everything changed. They're bringing down the statue of Christopher Columbus and are hoping to erase the city's connection to Columbus. And in doing that, they went to, you know, the closest native son that they could find that definitely, I don't know if I would say embodies the spirit of Ohio, but I mean, he definitely is a solid person. He is of a giving nature. He's always taking care of his staff. He's always going out of his way to work towards helping people. And I you know what? I'm down for this. History being what it is, I don't know if you necessarily need to pull down the statue of Christopher Columbus. That's a story for another time and a conversation that I'm not prepared to have right now. But with the thought of renaming it in a positive light in lieu of what everything that has happened and how awful the situation has gone, this is the bright light that people need to focus on. And I think this is going to be a positive. If this passes, I think this is a great idea. We can start, you know, renaming other places, like, you know, Texas. Once they get everything worked through, and I don't know where they're at with the signing of the petition, and petitions are only so effective because with all the signatures in the world, you can submit it, and I wish our legal system was that effective sometimes, and it can be a little, you know, bothersome. But this could be kind of cool. I will be following this story just because of my love for Guy Fieri. Maybe they'll rename England to, no, he's Scottish. Never mind. That would be bad. To rename. Never mind. I'll stop talking there. So, Guy Fieri, Charitable Man, everybody loves, well, not everybody loves Guy, but I am definitely of the fan side when it comes to Guy, and we'll see how this story progresses. As of Sunday afternoon, more than 17,400 people have signed the petition, and even Budweiser noticed this and are jumping on board to give out free Bud Light and seltzer to all the residents. This is creating the right kind of buzz, the right kind of positive buzz that I think everybody needs. Everyone needs a nice little break from reality, and I would just like to say I'm going to Flavortown. Yep, going to Flavortown. In comic book news, this actually, with everything else that's going on, comic books, of course, still kind of teetering, kind of rocking back and forth. Everyone is curious to see what happens with San Diego Comic-Con, if we're going to get anything out of that. I know J. Scott Campbell is doing exclusive signings. That would have been the convention special that you can order from his website that are signed. That I actually picked up the Catwoman. He really loves Catwoman. And actually, Campbell is so amazing as an artist that I can't resist buying his. I can't resist buying everything of his. If I put up all of just his artwork and took everybody else down, I could probably just wallpaper a house with all the art that I picked up from J. Scott Campbell. Anyway, with that out there, and everyone still, we were watching shops close, everyone going virtual. Vendors, everyone kind of struggling in this new COVID-19 crisis. The people over at Skybound, which is Kirkman's baby. This is the company that he created for better facilitating his Walking Dead merchandise, his everything that Walking Dead kind of created. And Skybound has been quite the juggernaut for the last decade when it comes to merch. And of course it should. It's the home for Walking Dead. With the end of Walking Dead, it kind of left everybody, you know, a little high and dry. And with that, the team over there is very proud to announce that they are doing a special Negan Lives number one one-shot to kind of catch everyone up with what's going on with everyone's favorite bad guy. And I honestly, you know what, I am kind of pissed at how they left Negan with the final issue. We never really got some serious closure to the character. And you see him swing so drastically in the comic, and they learned from their mistakes of killing off, like, the governor, which, in my mind, I still think is probably the better-written villain than Negan. Negan is just brutal and definitely a product of the environment and what can happen when you're, you know, alone with your thoughts for too long. The governor was just a mixed bag of crazy. And they probably shouldn't have knocked him off. And I think if he needed to die. Don't get me wrong. The governor needed to die. But maybe not as he did. Anyway, Kirkman has released, letting everybody know that there is going to be a special one-shot for Negan. Now, this is going to be in your local comic book shops, and only your local comic book shops, starting July 1st. So contact your shops, let them know if you are interested. The whole nice thing about this is the Kirkman and Skybound and all of that have decided that they are not charging the comic shops for this. That 100% of the proceeds from the sale of this book is going directly to the shop. And I think this is actually spectacular. So the store completely benefits from having this in the store. I mean, we haven't seen anything since Walking Dead 174. I think that's the final issue for Walking Dead. And it is left everyone kind of high and dry, without a doubt. So to see what happens and to have all of these funds just go directly to the comic book shop is impressive and so refreshing, because I've talked about it through the entire COVID, behind all of it. Jim Lee's step up, everybody trying to help keep stores afloat, which is a vital lifeline to the collecting industry, to pop culture. This has become the staple that everyone has built their stories around. So to see, and even Kirkman acknowledged, he's all like, if it wasn't for the fans, if it wasn't for the shops, Walking Dead would not exist. Walking Dead would not be where it is today. Because without the comic, without the sales, without everybody getting behind him when he started this, Walking Dead would have been a failed endeavor. It would never have gone anywhere. And it hit like right at the perfect time. Snuck in under the radar. Nobody was expecting it to be as good as it was. And I'm one of them. I picked it up just on a whim. I was like, okay, let's just see what the world looks like the day after, the day after, and the day after. So, Kirkman totally acknowledging if it wasn't for the shops, he'd be in straits. He wouldn't be here. So, all of the proceeds, starting on July 1st, when the shops will have this available for sale, absolutely. I want two. I want three. I honestly think that this is a huge, huge hit, and I don't know, and this may be coming in at a weird time, and I don't know if some shops have seen this, because the diamond code on it shows March of when this was available. So I think that they were going to do the one shot and have changed their mind based on everything that happened to make it free to the retailers, but they were going to do it anyway. And I don't know, with everything that's going on, especially with the code being in March, that it could be one of those things that the retailers may not have seen it or thought it was something else, like, you know, Negan's Greatest Hits. So this may or may not be at your shop, but you're not going to have a way of doing a digital download or anything else like that. This is 100% comic book shop driven. So support your local shop. Contact them now. Get it on your pull, because this, I honestly think this one's going to fly off the shelf. If I'm going to speculate, this one's going to be a huge hit. And you're supporting your comic shops, which, again, that's not a lose in anyone's mind at all. So, in video game news, not a lot. Everyone, I know that The Last of Us has got some new DLC stuff that I haven't gotten to. And, of course, Grand Theft Auto's got a sale. But I think Grand Theft Auto is always on sale. I think. But I always get, like, the news on it, because I'm, like, one of the last few people that hasn't done Grand Theft Auto. I mean, a little bit, but nothing too spectacular in that department. But we talked about everything else that was going on in the gaming industry at the moment, so as more stuff hits, we'll let you know. This week, in the restaurants that helped me survive the COVID, I'm shifting gears a little bit. I'm mixing it up, and not every day, because I don't want to paint the picture that I'm eating out every day. That, you know, it's nothing but lobster Thermidor and, you know, cocktails every hour for me. But it was a quest, because I got bored with eating out, and I wasn't sure, and not every day I wanted to cook, and everyone probably had the same kind of anxiety about, you know, where to go, what to do, and God, I don't want to cook again, and going to the grocery store and all of that stuff, and trying to kind of ration and pace yourself. So while I was sitting there working on various things, it came to mind, because everyone knows my love for wings and my quest for the best drunken noodles. But another thing that you may or may not know, I used to be, like, heavily addicted to spicy chicken sandwiches. It was, like, the go-to thing for me. Anytime I would go out, in Wendy's in particular, all I would ever order, that or a double stack with cheese, ketchup only. Spicy chicken sandwich has been, like, the one thing that I always looked for. So while I was sitting there, it came to me, why not compare? There are plenty of restaurants now that have their own rendition of spicy chicken sandwiches. So in my quest of restaurants to help me survive, I decided, why not visit some of the various fast food restaurants to see who's got the better spicy chicken sandwich. Now, out of the gate, I want it known that there is no Roscoe's in Colorado. So, unfortunately, Roscoe's gets omitted. Not because I haven't tried their chicken sandwiches, and Roscoe's is fantastic. Don't kid me. I've been to Roscoe's plenty of times, and their chicken is scrumptious. So, that said, Roscoe gets omitted just because they don't have a location here in Colorado, which I think is a huge miss. And I was honestly surprised that there isn't one here. So, okay. There is a Church's But Church's does not offer a chicken sandwich, which I thought was strange. And maybe it was just the location I went to, but I was a little taken back that they didn't have a chicken sandwich. Kind of seemed like a miss on my point. And Kentucky Fried Chicken. Rumors aside that they grow their chicken in petri dishes or little test tubes and it's, you know, tube-fed nonsense, whatever. It's genetically grown chicken. Sorry, just the prospect and the visual just cracked me up every time thinking about that. Kentucky Fried Chicken, I did not go to. I haven't gone to a Kentucky Fried Chicken in ages simply because of the merger between Kentucky Fried Chicken and A&W. The flavors mix, it's kind of nasty, and Bucket of Grease is never really on the menu and never should be a choice. So those are the restaurants that got skipped, and rightfully so. Now, the criteria. What, in my mind, would establish a decent chicken sandwich? Of course, the most crucial element is the chicken. And this seems to be like the biggest miss on most of them. For example, and at the bottom, in my opinion, was McDonald's. They do have a spicy chicken sandwich, but it is more of like a thin fish fillet on a really weird bun. It's more like a biscuit and shredded lettuce. That's not a chicken sandwich. That's just, and granted, it is like, I think, on their dollar menu, but it's just, come on, put a little something into it. And it's not like all that spicy. There is no real big kick or anything like that. It has a different color to it. And I think that that's just because they didn't know how to season it, or they at least want to give the impression of spicy, the perception of spicy. Perception's reality. If it looks spicy, it must be spicy. So the chicken is paramount. I mean, that is what you're buying. That is what you're after. Next, of course, is the spice. It is a spicy chicken sandwich, so it should go hand in hand. So who has the better spice? In addition to, how is it served? Is it just kind of tossed in there all willy-nilly and no one really cares? Which most of the time is on the burger side, and I get it. Burgers are burgers, and you know, you sling them and you don't really care, but I in my mind, chicken deserves a little bit delicate of a touch, a little more attention, if you will. So where did I go? McDonald's, of course, which I've already mentioned. We also have Sonic, Good Times, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and Pie Pies. All of these have chicken sandwiches. And McDonald's is at the bottom. Don't kid yourself. You can be a McDonald's lover all you want. You can send me all the ats you want about this one. McDonald's sucks. They should have just stayed with the formula of burgers and what made them strong and forgotten all of the other nonsense that they have done. I agree 100% with that. And the chicken sandwich is kind of more of like an afterthought and kind of like, we'll just throw this one to the peasants. No thanks, McDonald's. Bite me. Now, the thing is, right above McDonald's is Good Times. Now, not because of Good Times being bad. In fact, Good Times, in my mind, as a fast food restaurant, is at the top of the list. And it's not because of their chicken sandwich, but it's because of the Big Daddy Bacon Cheeseburger. I went to Good Times in the attempt to get a chicken sandwich. But every single time I went there, I ended up walking away with a Bacon Daddy Deluxe. That is their closer. That is the best thing you're going to get at Good Times, and I can't order anything else, as much as I have tried. And I went a couple times. Don't kid yourself. This wasn't just one failed attempt and I'm like, I gave it up. No. Good Times, I just didn't get to try your sandwich, but don't do anything to the Bacon Daddy Deluxe, because that is a work of art. That should be hanging somewhere in a museum or the town hall or it should be hanging in Canton right now as far as MVP of sandwiches. This is what it should look like. This is what a burger should taste like. And pace de resistance. Yes. So, good times. Good. But I never got the chicken sandwich. That's the truth. Not going to lie to you. Next up, of course, is Sonic. Now, Sonic kind of was fine. I mean, again, nothing special. And it's kind of like in the same realm as the McDonald's as an afterthought. Kind of like, yeah, we'll just do this. Sonic, but that's not Sonic's niche. Same as Good Times. I'm not going to Sonic for a chicken sandwich. I'm going there for their tater tots and cheese. I'm going for one of their other, like, staples that is good for Sonic. I'm not going there for a chicken sandwich. And I honestly think I'm not the only one that has this in their mind. Because the presentation on it, I think they're just like, well, you know, we'll offer this, but this isn't what we do. And rightfully so. So, Sonic, tater tots and cheese all day, chicken sandwich, not so much. Now, that all aside, then it gets to be an outright battle. Because when you're looking at quality of chicken and the flavors and what it comes on, and this was painful to say and to admit, but Wendy's really is at the bottom of this. And it's not because... No, it is because of the chicken. The inconsistencies of Wendy's. They vary from wherever you go. And even the ones that I used to frequent, you can tell when they're getting to the bottom of the box of chicken. Okay? They're all frozen. They're in the back. I know. You just throw them into the fryer. You thaw them. You put them in, you know, whatever you're nuking them in. So that annoys me. There's no consistency. And sometimes it's mostly like breading with like this leathery chicken interior, and it just is and you're eating essentially cardboard. I mean, it really does taste like you're eating battered cardboard. But when Wendy's is on, they're great. I mean, the chicken was decent. The spicy is marginal. You can kind of taste it. It's not horrible. I mean, it's not as good as their spicy chicken nuggets, that's for sure. But it just, it really left a bad taste in my mouth. The next one, and this is where it really gets to a fight. Because the chicken consistency is good, the spice is good, but here's the thing, okay? For a chicken sandwich, I want cheese. And the only reason this one is coming in at second right now is because they don't offer cheese. And that's Popeyes. Popeyes does not have cheese. They don't put cheese on their sandwiches. And that's what the dude told me. No, man, we don't put cheese on our sandwiches. What? How? What? No, wait. Huh? Is this you just don't have cheese? Is it just not in the building? But I went, oh, okay. The portion of chicken? Spectacular. It is awesome. Oh, it is bountiful. It overstretches the bun. The chicken is cooked well. I mean, it is adequate. It is beyond adequate. And I mean, I'll always go to Popeyes for Popeyes Tuesday, where, you know, you get your choice buck chicken. And absolutely. I mean, was a fan already of that, and was kind of, you know, leery of their chicken sandwiches, and then just finally decided to do it, but especially with this quest. And the flavor was good. The chicken portion was more than satisfying, and I'm like, okay. And it was juicy. It wasn't Wendy's. It was not this, you know, thin kind of monstrosity of like Franken chicken. Like, you don't know what parts are in that thing. This was like a decent breast. Like, in fact, I went back again and again and again. The one that I continue to go back to a lot, and in fact I crave it, and I'm not interested in their politics. This was just simply for research. But I do crave them, and maybe it's just because of the MSG count. But Chick-fil-A constantly delivers some of the best chicken. And their spicy chicken sandwich, the spice is good. Again, the portion is of a good size most of the time. There have been, don't get me wrong, times where they're at the bottom of the box and you can tell where the chicken is not as big and doesn't exceed the bun, which kind of goes back and forth in my mind. I never ran into that the multiple times I hit Popeyes, just to clarify. But I haven't frequented there as often as I have in the past and with Chick-fil-A. So going there, and this was the clincher. I get cheese. I really want cheese. And of course you get the pepper jack cheese at Good Time or at Chick-fil-A, and it is. I mean, that is. I like it. I really do. I know it's probably some waxy processed nonsense, but it just tastes so good. So I can't resist that. And that is a clincher for me. I really, that's basically what it came down to. If Popeyes decides to put cheese on their chicken sandwich, I would immediately move them to the front in my dining habits and how much I really enjoyed their chicken. And I was surprised. The spices are comparable. They both have the same, and I think it also varies from franchise to franchise what they do. Because some of them, because I did hit different ones just to kind of sample to see if there's any kind of variation or how consistent they can be, since that is the killer for Wendy's, because you don't know what you're going to get. But with the standards that Popeyes and Chick-fil-A have put in place, they maintain them very well. So I was comfortable hitting different shops and finding that it was the same. But maybe it's just the MSG that's in the Chick-fil-A. Whatever they put in that stuff that just makes you crave Chick-fil-A, because there have been times where just like, you know what? I really want a Chick-fil-A. It always happens on Sunday, though, which is really weird. I want Chick-fil-A on Sunday, and they're not open. So I don't get it. Yeah. One restaurant that's worth a mention but is not listed in this is Burger King. Their chicken sandwich is just... They don't have a spicy chicken, at least that I'm aware of, and their chicken is just nonsense. Again, long sandwich, throw in some lettuce... Just a real afterthought, kind of like, okay, we're going to be unique, but we're not going to take it any further than that. Just, it looks pretty. Don't eat it. And that is my wrap on restaurants that helped me survive the COVID this week. Next week, I may go back to enlightening you on my drunken noodles quest or wings. So I haven't decided which it's going to be yet. But be sure to tune in and find out what it is. So that kind of wraps up this week. Like I said, it's a weird light week. We had Father's Day this last weekend, and I did like the meme of Samuel L. Jackson, Happy Father's Day, which means happy, you know, motherfucker day. not derogatory towards anybody. I just thought it was a clever meme, especially with Samuel L. Jackson in the caption. But yeah, kind of a light week. I'm sure as we get closer to everything returning more towards normal, things will break out, things will be available. We're starting to see books back on a regular basis, and the movies continue to be in stasis. I mean, is the best term. Theaters releasing how they're going to approach the mask, the social distancing, all of that has come into light. Huge fan backlash on that, and I know it's not a perfect plan yet, and I know they're trying to kind of gauge the response from fans, from the moviegoers on how to approach this, because there's no science. There really isn't. How do you do it? Because you're there to eat popcorn and drink soda and enjoy a film, and you can't eat popcorn through a mask. And so you wear the mask up and two. And I even saw a post the other day of a guy that was like, really strange, because he's like, well, they made me wear the mask through the restaurant up to the table, but as soon as I was at the table, I could take the mask off. So he found that rather amusing, and I was like, okay, I can kind of get behind that thought process. See, like I said, there is no exact science. It's all about taking care of yourself, trying to help take care of others the best that you can, and just be conscious of those around you. Also, be sure to go hit Suzy Q's webpage up, suzyqs.com. She also has a Facebook page. Follow her on Instagram. She is a wonderfully talented, extremely perky individual, and has nothing but love and rainbows for everybody inside of her. So buy something, check her out, and let us know your thoughts. Always open to questions, dialogue. Give us a like, give us a follow, subscribe. Available on all platforms that you are following and probably not following. So we're here at your disposal. Let me know if there's anything you'd like to know more about. And yeah, that covers this week. We'll see you next week. So in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always, always be kind.